It's a division rival where we get it, and Burrow has had success against Baltimore in the past. But are the Ravens going in here with an opportunity to maybe stick a fork in Cincinnati in regards to, at the very least, winning the AFC North?
Yeah, I think that's probably the main takeaway from this. I mean, to come back from what 1-4, having to go to Baltimore perhaps to win that tiebreaker against the Ravens if they somehow come back. The vibes would definitely be very, very bad at Cincinnati if they drop this one. They can certainly get healthier along that defense and maybe turn up things. I think obviously their schedule, by virtue of what finishing last place in the AFC North last year, probably a little bit more accommodating than the Ravens. But I think right now what you've seen reflected in all the analytics and betting markets is that this feels like a two-horse race between the Ravens and the Steelers right now in the AFC North. And I think if the Ravens come out of this on Sunday with a win, I don't know if that's changing. I think that's probably just going to be even more solidified.
Jonas, there's a lot of things, you know, I like, you know, Ravens' favorite on both sides of the ball. What are you thinking the O-line? You think McCary's going to be at left guard? I'm guessing because their D tackles aren't that good. I think having McCary in there because Voorhees is not 100% yet, you think?
Yeah, I think that would probably be my best guess based off some of the early indications in practice. I'll have a better sense in about half an hour when we get eyes on these guys. I mean, obviously, Voorhees still not being a full participant. You don't want to risk him and risk his health if you know, you feel like you've got a more than capable left guard there in Patrick McCary, and they certainly do. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a Bengals front that's maybe the worst that the Ravens face all year. I mean, Trey Hendrickson is definitely a dude up front. But other than that, their run defense is spectacularly terrible. I don't think they had a pass rusher, like, in the top 110 of PFF's win rate aside from Trey Hendrickson. So if he's out, or if that he aggravates that stinger, or if he's just limited in some way, this could be a situation where the Ravens can not only run for, you know, a pick your number type total, but also, you know, have Lamar drifting back there 3 to 4 seconds every drop back, because who else is going to get to him?
I think we're going to see we're not going to see 45 and 35 runs this week. I don't think, and for the reasons that you're saying, you know, I don't think the defensive line is very good, and then I really don't think that the secondary is very good, especially Cam Taylor-Britt. I think he's terrible, you know, and then the safeties with Geno Stone, they don't run well. So I think they're going to be able to take advantage of the middle of the field. I think we're going to see more throws, Jonas. If we see a lot of runs, it'll be in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Vinny, I think Cam Taylor-Britt got benched in that game against the Panthers.
Yeah, but then they brought him back.
Oh, they did? Okay.
And he got burned again on that post route by number 5.
Yeah. Well, it seems like Dakville, Justice's little bro, is having a solid season, I think. When the Commanders went off against the Bengals in week 3, it was like primarily targeting the side of the field opposite Dexville. So I think, you know, that would be a potentially interesting matchup for whoever is lining up there. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting that PFF grades for the linebackers there in Cincinnati were pretty good, because it doesn't feel like any part of this Cincinnati defense has been really all that spectacular, but this would be one heck of a nice game for Mark Andrews to bounce back, for Isaiah Likely to do stuff after the catch. I mean, it just seems like the entire menu of plays in that playbook for Todd Monken is going to be available at his disposal. And you know, obviously, what you can't afford are, you know, the dumb 1 or 2 turnovers that have kind of hurt the Ravens in some of these losses to the Bengals over the years. But it's hard to imagine, barring just spectacular plays from Cincy and really having a whole lot of, you know, change-ups or curveballs that could knock this Ravens offense off schedule.
Hey, Jonas, I thought that Zach Orr and Monken called great games last week, and I'm hoping that Zach can stack, you know, another game. Now, you know, there wasn't the communication issues, and they seemed to play faster and more aggressive.
Yeah, they did. I mean, obviously, excuse me, a bit of a cliche at this point, just for them to talk about communication, but That was what made last year's defense so special under Mike McDonald. And, you know, I guess the half of the year before that when Roquan Smith, you know, the kind of watchword was obnoxious communication. They want to over-communicate everything. And I think you finally saw them buttoned up on pretty much all plays except for that one weird scramble where Josh Allen made a 50-yard dart, 1 yard from the sideline. But, you know, for them to do what they did with the crowd roaring when the Bills were on offense, I think is a good sign. Obviously, you know, when you have Ja'Marr Chase, when you have T. Higgins, but those are two guys who can take a perfect defense and just twist it into knots because they are both really special players. You know, I don't know how good I would feel about Nate Wiggins trying to tackle Ja'Marr Chase in space. I don't know how good I would feel about Nate Wiggins being a guy who's asked to see a lot of T. Higgins on, you know, those kind of jump ball routes that he has specialized in over the years. But otherwise, I mean, I think the Ravens should feel pretty good about how they match up up front. I know the Cincinnati run game has done pretty good things with more 12 personnel, with more six offensive line combinations. But I just feel like, you know, who's better up front right now than the Ravens and setting the edge. And if they can make Joe Burrow one-dimensional, force him into a lot of third and longs, and that's when Zach Orr can get creative and, you know, run the kind of five-man pressures, simulated pressures, creepers, whatever, that really had Josh Allen on the run all Sunday night.
Hey, Jonas, you know what I like watching the film? You probably saw it too, was Travis Jones was in a backfield all day. I mean, he used that Reggie White club one time, and he's much quicker, you know, and he's using his hands well. I like how he's playing. And, you know, and Burrow's not the biggest guy in the world. So if they can get some inside pressure, you know, and get in his face, I think that's going to be big for them.
Yeah, I think the best lineman on that Bengals front is definitely Orlando Brown Jr. He's been really, really good so far. But the center is a little bit shaky. Obviously, Amarius Mims can look like a stud for one series and then look like a dud for the next. But that's kind of what you get with a first-round rookie who hasn't played a whole lot in college.
Eight games.
Travis Jones continues to do that thing. I mean, that hump move, that club move is just so fun to watch because it is just the absolute, you know, embodiment of the raw power, finally matching the level of technique that he has. And I was actually talking to Brent Urban about it. He said, you know, he's always had that power, but for him to kind of match it up with the technique and just be able to throw dudes out the club is really, really impressive. And I think he was asked this week about, you know, his limited pass rush production in terms of the raw numbers, but he feels like the sacks will come. And even if they don't, if you can be a guy that you have to double team on all obvious passing downs, and that means that Matabike is going to get more one-on-ones. Yeah. That means that you're going to free up other guys for better blitz lanes. And yeah, I mean, he just looks like a force out there, even if the traditional counting stats don't really show it.
Jonas Schaefer, Baltimore Banner, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, joins us every Friday. And Jonas, tell everybody what's happening at BaltimoreBanner.com. I'm sure very rational discussion, and the feedback is very rational. They don't want to fire managers or coaches and all of the good stuff that goes along with that, right?
Yeah, plenty of postmortems on the Orioles. of course, the two Orioles games that I watched from start to finish all year, they lose by scoring a combined one run in, so that was not fun for me. But yeah, I mean, obviously, we got Ravens coverage cranking up right now. Got a preview up. We've got something on Derrick Henry and just him, his fast start to September. You know, he in Tennessee, I think, averaged 3.9 yards per carry in September over that Titans career. And for September in Baltimore, he gets 6 yards per carry. So, what does that say about what this rushing attack could look like by the time we get to these winter months? But yeah, just the usual stuff will be Cincinnati this weekend to cover that game, and I'll be talking to you guys next week.
Yeah, at least the Terps are 0-2 in the Big Ten. Wait a minute, what? Hey, we'll talk about that next week. Jonas Schaefer, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Friday.
Thanks, Jonas.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Jonas Schaefer, BaltimoreBanner.com. Check it out, everybody. We'll come back. It is the Whip Around. Great Thursday night football game. We'll get into all of that and more. We're going to have all sorts of fun with the baseball preview later in the program. Got Vinny's Keys against Cincinnati coming up in about a half an hour. Keith Kavanaugh, bottom of the hour. Big get for Kevin Willard, another top 100 recruit for the class of 2025. And Big Ten Media Day was yesterday as well. So plenty to do. Featured Artist Friday at Smashing Pumpkins here on The Fan.
Vinny and Haney's Whip. brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County.
1057 The Fan.
1057 The Fan here on this Featured Artist Friday. Smashing Pumpkins. Got Ravens talk coming your way. Going to talk Terps with Keith Kavanaugh. Get into all. We're going to talk Orioles. Put a post, as Jonas said, post-mortem on them with Cordell Woodland. And preview the Ravens-Bengals with him around 12:30. But there was an epic wild card game.
Oh, boy.
I mean, we've seen some Bucky bleeping dent Yankees 1978. And I guess in Milwaukee, he's forever going to be known as Pete Bleeping Alonzo.
Williams sets. Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps his fist as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead.
Mets radio, as you could tell, they were down 2-0 heading into the ninth as the Brewers hit back-to-back homers in the seventh inning. Williams, their all-star closer, looked like he was going to close it. The walk to Lindor was huge because he was ahead in the count. Then gave up the single on an 0-2 count. And then Alonso hadn't homered in forever. And it hit since his last homer, .122.
Yep.
Very Adley Rutschman-like, not to throw Adley under the bus, to give you an idea, however, of how he'd been struggling. And he ropes one to right field. Then the Mets tack one on. By the way, Nolan, you get in here on this one. Anybody more annoying than Jesse Winker? See his antics when he scored the fourth run, slamming helmets?
Yeah, that helmet got obliterated.
Yeah, and he played for the Brewers. He's the guy that hit the walk-off against the Orioles when the Birds were up there against the Mets after they had just acquired him. And he was like he had just won Game 7 of the Ultimate World Series. So, off-putting, shall we say. But Pete Alonso. What a bomb. And your boy Murph.
Oh, I felt bad for him.
Two outs away from getting to the ALDS. Now the Mets advance in this epic series, which we expect it could be, against the Phillies will commence tomorrow at 4:05. But, man, what a heartbreaker. And, you know, the Orioles went quietly into the night. I mean, the Brewers were, like, right there, man.
I mean, Bob, like, if I didn't know Murph, you know, the manager, I wouldn't have felt like that. I just felt so bad for him. You know, he's 65 years old, first-time manager, and like you said, they're going to go to Philly and play, and then, oh, my God.
Yeah, it was brutal. But for the Mets, this magical season continues on. So here's what we got going on starting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. 1:08, excuse me. Tigers and Guardians. Who do you like in this series? Best of five, everybody. Best of five.
Who's pitching? Is Kubel?
Undecided. He pitched Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He won't pitch till Sunday.
I'm going Detroit, Bob. I mean, they're too hot. They've been the best team in baseball over the last half, and they find a way to win, and they got the best pitcher in baseball.
I like Detroit as well. It's the only upset I'm going to pick for this round, but they're just appear to be a team of destiny right now. Cleveland's bullpen, very daunting, but if you get in some runs early, they'll be all right.
Yeah, and they're generating some runs. Detroit's doing some really good things offensively. Tanner Bibee, with all due respect to you and the Guardians. Yeah, you're going down. I'm liking Detroit in this one, too. Mets at Phillies, we just talked about that. Undecided for New York against Zach Wheeler, who outside of Chris Sale, probably the best pitcher in the National League this year.
Yeah.
The Lenny Dykstra Bowl.
You know what, Bob? I'm going to take the Mets just because the comebacks, unbelievable comebacks they've had recently against Atlanta, and they should have lost both those series. I just think they're like Texas last year. I'm going to take the Mets.
No dog in this fight whatsoever, but I'll take the Phillies. I think they're kind of battle-tested playoff-wise, looking for redemption, losing Arizona in the NLCS last year, Nolan.
Yeah, similar reasoning for me. They've been here their entire core, and man, that atmosphere, Citizens Bank Park tomorrow, roof's going to blow off the place.
And that is at 4:08 on Fox, 6:38. I don't know what's up with the 8s, but TBS Max, Kansas City. Should it be the Orioles against the Yankees? Look, F New York, F the Yankees, but they win in four. New York over Kansas City can't score. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, the Orioles held them to three runs in two games.
Bob, I think the Yankees were the happiest team in the world when the Royals beat the O's.
And the Astros. Astros and Royals went down. Even a New York columnist said, hey, the two biggest foes are gone. If they don't, now all the pressure's on them.
And the O's owned the Yankees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm taking the Yankees.
Yeah, Yankees will advance here.
Yeah, four games. And then the Pods at the Dodgers. Cease against Yamamoto. Old Dylan Cease doing his thing. San Diego. I mean, look, they were 50-50 at one point in the season, and they went 93-69. So they, which one am I at? 43-19 down the stretch. That's pretty good, I think, right?
You know what? I want to take the Potter. I'm going to, because the Dodgers have the best player in baseball. I'm going to take Dodgers.
Right, best player in baseball, but really no postseason to experience.
Zero postseason
to draw upon. So it's a completely inappropriate comparison. But remember when all the hype surrounded Ohtani for the Home Run Derby? Again, it's completely different. But that was a very hyped up event, and he went out there, and I think he had like three homers and looked terrible. So who knows how he'll appear? I do have the Dodgers winning though.
Wrong! Padres in five.
I hope the Padres win.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Keith Cavanaugh, TerrapinTimes.com. Talk about the football team, 3-2 at the bye, but big recruiting news for Kevin Willard and the Hoops team. And then Vinny's keys to victory. Ravens try to make it three in a row. They're at Cincinnati, 2.5-point favorites. Recruiting trail, and here to talk about that and more from TerrapinTimes.com. Joins us every Friday. He is Keith Cavanaugh. Keith, what is up?
Good morning, and it is a good time, given the state of Terp football, to pivot hard to Terps basketball. What, November 4th, the opener, Bob?
Yes.
Jeez, right around the corner. But last week...
A month from today?
Just to put a button on, or a ribbon on football, you know, Vinny, I tried to brace you for the coming storm last week. Yeah. You were incredulous, but three things have happened, and then we'll move on to hoops. The rest of the league has gotten better. Maryland continues to beat themselves, and their O-line has been exposed even by, you know, mid-level Big Ten lines. So everyone right now is saying Northwestern's a must-win to save the season. When has that term ever been used, or that kind of language, when you're hanging your season and the future here on Northwestern? That will be a Friday night game here. They're already doing 40% off tickets, so hopefully some fans show up, but very troubling trends of late with football.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't have the schedule in front of me. Didn't they lose to Northwestern last year?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is fortunately here. But after Northwestern, you got USC, then Minnesota, Oregon, Rutgers, Iowa, Penn State. And what's wrong with this scene, guys? Rutgers, undefeated and ranked.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, undefeated and ranked. And then moving to the ACC, Duke, undefeated and ranked, all with, you know, relatively new coaches, you know, beyond Rutgers. Meanwhile, what we were, you know, in the summer, we projected the O-line would have issues and whatnot, but Maryland still has plenty of skill guys abound, and Billy Edwards still playing well, but they just can't get out of their own way. And it's troubling now that they may end up with just four wins at this pace. So, yeah, recruiting is going well, but you hope you hang on to these kids if you have a season like this. But anyhow,
yeah, let's
get back to that round ball.
Pivot like old Shaq Attack here.
Yeah, so, you know, the great news, you know, last week we talked about him, the four-star point guard, combo guard, Chris Jeffrey out of Mount Zion Academy in Lanham, Maryland. He committed to Maryland. Now, he's a Brooklyn native. He's tough, strong, aggressive, physical. He looks like he's a 40-year-old man already. Tight handle, like Bob Haney back in the day at Pigtown Rec.
And Street Rec. Let's get it right.
Yeah, that too. Can score at all three levels. Mid-range, he's deadly. Outside three-point shooting is very solid and improving, but a guy who just gets it done. As we discussed last week, he's kind of the Mateen Cleaves, John Gilchrist type. So that's two four-stars already in addition, you know, to Marcus Jackson. Of course, last year from Mount Zion, they got Malachi Palmer, who's a standout freshman already at Maryland in the summer and workouts, and I expect good things from. So that's really good. Two four-stars already and both locals. and continuing to mine Mount Zion Prep in Lanham, which has become a local basketball power. But yeah, media day this week, you know, the Terps have taken a lot care of a lot of things and holes they lacked last year. They finally have a true post pivot guy in Derek Queen, the 5-star All-American. They have toughness in that, you know, Miguel is kind of like a, I don't want to say a poor man's Des Wells, but not quite at the Des Wells level, but toughness, and he's a bucket getter. So you got a guy out there who's a bucket getter. Clearly, you got better shooters via the portal. You have more depth. You have more versatility, more maturity with the youngins that have grown up. You'll be able to push tempo more. Chance Stevens is physically cleared to go. He, you know, he's a three-point marksman who transferred in 2 years ago. Unfortunately, blew out the Achilles. Jahari Long still recovering from the knee. But Willard really likes this team, and you've added some key pieces and depth where you can do some more things. And yeah, totally. I haven't even mentioned Rodney Rice, who will be a sixth man, seventh man, along with Jordan Geronimo. So some really nice pieces have to come together, and they've addressed critical needs from last year, mostly three-point shooting.
Keith Cavanaugh, TerrapinTimes.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, as he does every Friday. Matter of fact, Manhattan a month from today, tipping off the 2024-2025 season, which means that it's been 30 years since Joe Smith played for Maryland, which is incredible. But Joe Lunardi's latest bracketology has Maryland outside looking in. If we do, like, we talk about Maryland football expectations were to level up. Mike Loxie said best team he's had. They'll be lucky to even get to a bowl game. What about this year for Willard, year three after last year's debacle? What's a realistic hope for the revamp Big Ten and beyond?
Well, let's not forget 2 years ago, second round NCAAs. Last year, what, they lost 10 of 18 games within 2 points in the final 2 minutes or final 90 seconds. Many do have them in the tournament. There's any number of prognosticators and polls. What do they pick? 10th out of 18 by the Big Ten media. You know, Indiana was second, but they always kind of falter. You know, obviously Purdue, are they a little overrated? I'm not sure. But you're bringing in, you know, UCLA. What do they pick? Fourth. And USC and whatnot. So I'm excited for the season. Same with the women. I mean, they brought in 8 newbies. The men brought in 7, and they address some needs too, where they'll be able to finally have a front court, finally have more depth, and push tempo as well, like both these teams like to do. So I think this is a team, you know, last year, had they made 1 or 2 3-pointers more after going 3 for 4,060 from 3, yeah, they could have been in the tournament with some critical losses down the stretch. So they were right there on the cusp, just couldn't finish.
Hey, Keith, when we talked last Friday, if I'd have told you that, you know, they're going to get 4 turnovers, and Indiana hadn't turned the ball over yet all season, if they were going to get 4 turnovers, what would you have thought then?
Maryland was plus 10 when we talked last week. Indiana had not given it up yet. The quarterback, board of bank, looked like a deer working, a deer in headlights coming out. Couldn't take advantage of that. And one thing I've never heard in that presser, raise the white flag. I don't think I've ever heard that before. So that was discouraging, you know, at the end where they were punting. He said it because he didn't want any more injuries and whatnot, but I'm not sure. That's something that's going to ingratiate yourself with the fans and encourage them. So we can only hope Friday night folks come out, they can bounce back, get some confidence. I mean, look at Ty Felton, the season he's had, Billy Edwards. But with each year, sadly, there's a diminishing of talent on the O-line, and it does not seem to be getting addressed. And the self-inflicted. I mean, you're 6 years in. How many times are we going to have 7 penalties at half and 11 by the end of the game and critical mental situation, you know, gaffes or whatnot? So it'll be problematic because many people pick Maryland winning their first 6 and losing their last 6. It would be a miracle right now to win 6. So not to be a negative nabob, but I tried to warn Vinny last week. I know he's wearing his turf pom-poms.
I got my turf hat on today.
He's got a Maryland hat on today. It's a freebie, but it's a hat nonetheless. He's Keith Kavanaugh, TerrapinTimes.com. Keith, appreciate the time as always. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right. You two guys, take care. Thanks.
Maryland basketball starts a month from today. Hey, Nolan, Christmas tree's going up in less than 2 months. When we come back, how about the keys are coming up right now as the Ravens get ready to take on the Bengals, 2.5-point favorites, trying to win their third in a row. Cincinnati trying to get themselves back into the AFC North mix. We'll do our picks for this game and all the others later on in the program. Got keys coming up next. Got news from the nest. Top of the hour. We're going to hear from Zach Orr ahead of this Bengals matchup.
Vinny and Haney's keys to the game.
We're doing a hell of a job. We're resilient, we're moving on, and we're playing our ass off. It's an NFL football game right here.
105.7 The Fan.
Baltimore Ravens have won two consecutive games and have been very impressive running the football in doing so. Trying to get over 500 coming up Sunday, 1 o'clock, against the Cincinnati Bengals. How do they get it done, Vinny? Keys to victory.
All right, number one, defensively, give up less than 60 yards rushing. Got to make them one-dimensional. And, I mean, they're 23rd. They're ranked 23rd anyhow in the rush, getting 102 yards. You know, Zach Moss is averaging 3.9. Longest run is 16 yards. And Chase Brown, he's got 29 carries, and he's averaging 6.3. And, you know, so, I mean, they like to throw it to those guys a lot, too. And Zach Moss, they got some bursts and stuff. I mean, if they have a hole, they may not go the distance, but they'll get you some yards and stuff. That's why. And I'm not that big on their O-line either in the run block, Cincinnati's. And I love the Ravens' defensive front. So I'd be totally disappointed if they allowed the run, because then that just opens up things a lot more for Joe Burrow. We got to have it where he's throwing it 60 times. That's kind of what I'm seeing. And then the next one is less than three plays over 20 yards for the Bengals. Less than three over... And I call them explosive plays, 20 yards. And the Oakland game, the Vegas game, 5 in the fourth quarter they gave up. 5 in the fourth quarter. And they're a much better defense than they were then. But this is the best receiving core that they have seen. So this is going to be interesting for them. But the Ravens are coming off their best defensive game. So like it. And there wasn't the communication issues. And I don't see... T. Higgins yet. He's got 9 catches, Bob. He's averaged 11. You know, and he's got 24 yak yards. So to me, he's not T. Higgins yet. Whereas Jamar Chase got 136 yak yards, and he's got 19 for 300. And then Yoshevich. Yeah, he's got 11 catches, and he doesn't have any yak yards either, Bob. So Chase is their yak guy. That's big. And then Gesicki can catch the football. He gets a lot of, you know, he's got 15 catches, and he doesn't have a ton of yak yards either. So less than three plays. If they keep them less than three plays over 20 yards, that means they're tackling extremely well, because he's going to dump the ball off quick. But we did hear Joe Burrow talk about we got to take some, you know, we got to go. We got to do whatever it takes to win, and that's on me. So you know they're going to take some shots. And, Bob, they're going to take some shots on Brandon Stevens. I would, because he can't find a ball. That's who I'm taking shots on. Next one is win the turnover battle. Don't beat yourself. Do not beat yourself. Do not turn the ball over. Don't give him a short field. Don't let him get excited. And then number four, Lamar, no sacks. If he has no sacks, and they're one of the worst teams in the league with 5 sacks, and if Lamar has no sacks, they're going to throw it more than 20 times. They're going to throw it more than 20 times because he's going to, and because their secondary guys are not that good. So his ability to get some chunk plays and get these guys yak stuff, I really like the matchup in throwing the football on their linebackers and secondary. And
wouldn't that change the identity?
Yeah.
Which has become a big talking point here.
Yeah. And, Pratt, the one linebacker, he's been limited all week, so he's got an ankle. So test that out too. And number five, over 400 yards of offense, and need 6 plus explosive plays over 20 yards, 6 plus. And a lot of that'll come from, you know, hopefully it's, you know, yak yards. That's what I think a lot of it'll be, because I think all these guys, I'm not big on either safety. I don't think the safeties run well. One of them's Geno Stone. And the corner, like we talked about, Cameron Britt, I don't like him. And Hill, a former safety, is their other corner. So I mean, advantage Ravens, I think. And then the next one is have the best special teams on the field. They got a hell of a kicker.
Yeah, McLaughlin.
Yeah, McPherson.
McPherson, excuse me.
Yeah, he's 9 of 10, but he's 3 of 3 from 50-plus. So they've got an excellent kicker. And I hope that, you know, watching that game last night, Bob, just put it in the end zone. Just put it in the end zone.
Yep.
You know, maybe Koo Kim or Kim doesn't
young,
have a...
Young Hay.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't have a strong enough leg, but, I mean, that one dude brought it out 50-some yards.
Well, he did kick a 50-yarder, send that thing in overtime.
Yeah, twice. Yeah. So those are my keys. I feel good about this game, you know, but you got to make them one-dimensional, and I think they're going to be able to get after Burrow's ass. And I would say 3-plus sacks, but he gets rid of the ball quick, and he doesn't take a lot of sacks. I mean, Bob, they've only given up 8 sacks, and it's not because they have a great O-line. It's because he gets rid of the ball rather quickly, and he's got a good feel in the pocket and stuff, but whoever's rushing on the Ravens' left side, you got a good chance to win a lot against Mims. And then against Orlando Brown, I think they got a chance, especially if at the play gets Oway will cause him a lot of problems just because he's relentless. And inside, Matt Abike and Travis Jones should be able to win there. And if they can get pressure up inside, Joe Burrow can't step up. That'll be big.
Been seeing Broderick Washington getting in the backfield a little bit here lately.
None of them have played bad, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And Pierce will be back this week, too. So I'm guessing then maybe who sits? Do we go back to
Urban, I guess?
Urban, yeah, probably.
We'll do our picks at 1:15, but I'm leaning Puffy Pants in favor of Baltimore, but stay tuned. We'll let you know in the program as it continues on. News from the Nest, as a matter of fact, is coming up here in a matter of minutes. We'll count that weekend money, buy or sell. Any October crustaceans coming your way? Let's see if we got that extra cake. We'll talk Orioles and Ravens with Cordell Woodland. He was there for the two games that the Orioles lost. Their season has come to an end. The season-ending press conference by Elias Brandon High was yesterday. And he'll preview the Bengals and Baltimore Ravens. Vinny, stat breakdown of the two teams coming up at 12:45. NFL lunch, beat you some football. Have some highlights from that epic game last night, Thursday night. Overtime thriller won by Atlanta. We'll do our picks, as we said. And then Joe Danman, Fox 19 News, previews the game from a Cincinnati perspective.